Welcome to Authors on the Air. I'm your host, Pam Stack. We're proud to be part of the Authors on the Air Global Radio Network. This is my third interview for Superstar Wednesday, and it's certainly one that I'm absolutely looking forward to. My guest today is Nathan Singer. He is a musician, a writer, an artist. He does spoken word performance. He's also a playwright. And a bunch of other things. So I'm really excited to speak to him first about his music and also about his new book, Black Church Furnace. I'm proud to welcome Nathan Singer to the show. Nathan, hi. Welcome to Authors on the Air.
Thanks for having me, Pam.
It's my pleasure. I'm sorry that, we tried meeting up two other times and I wasn't able to make it. So I apologize, but I'm glad you're here today. I've been reading about you. Of course, I read your book, but I've been reading a lot about you. And am I getting the wrong impression, but is your music with the Whiskey Shambles really a priority for you above all else?
It is a very high priority. It most definitely is. It would be difficult for me to say that music is more important than the writing, or the writing is more important than the music. They all kind of come from the same creative place. They just sort of manifest themselves differently, you know. But I was a musician before I was a novelist, you know, and so that's always going to be important to me. And my books have a very strong kind of musical component to them anyway, so there's a lot of overlap between the two.
You know, I just finished playing Medicine Eyes, one of your video, your music videos, and I love the music. Are you influenced by a lot of blues players by chance, and maybe some rock also?
Oh yes, absolutely. And that is what the Whiskey Shambles are all about. We refer to ourselves as ultra blues, right? So we have this this sort of strong core of Delta and Hill Country blues, but we mix and match all kinds of other styles of blues and styles of music that rub up against blues. You know, I mean, some of it is really loud and heavy and intense, and some of it is almost kind of folksy, and, you know, it really runs a gamut, because all of us in the band, we love a great variety of music, but everything that we do is rooted in the blues.
Yeah, it sounds like it. I like that song very much. If listeners wanted to hear more of your music, where is the best place for them to go and listen to it?
Well, whiskeyshambles.com is your one-stop shop. We've got all of our recordings on there. We're actually in the studio right now finishing up our second full-length album. We have a couple of EPs on there. We also have t-shirts and, you know, all that kind of stuff. You can also stream the music. And there's a solo album for me on there called On Through the Night, which is actually the soundtrack for my second published novel, Chasing the Wolf. I always write an album's worth of music to go along with each novel that I write.
Wow.
And that's the only one that was ever released, because it seemed to fit. You know, I mean, it's a blues novel, you know, set in Mississippi in 1938, you know, so I wrote and recorded that album as sort of the soundtrack to that book, and it's the one that fits the best with the Whiskey Shambles, so that's available on whiskeyshambles.com as well.
Well, that's, you know, better than a Spotify list, I have to tell you. You know, to hear the original music versus somebody else's tunes with a book. Congratulations on that. Now, did I read that you collaborated on a blues-based mystery with Morgan Freeman and maybe John Grisham on a book called
Yes.
Delta Blues?
Yeah.
Can you share a little bit about that, please? Yeah.
Yeah, this was probably eight years ago at this point.
Mm-hmm.
I should backtrack a little bit and talk about the publishers that first put this together that they sadly have gone under, but they really did a lot of great, interesting work. They started off as Bleak House Books and then became Tyrus Books. which ended up being bought by Simon & Schuster a few years ago. But they put out a really cool crime fiction anthology called Chicago Blues. And it was all these short stories set in and around Chicago. And, you know, they're short crime fiction stories, but they had, you know, they all had this blues element to them. And Ben Leroy, who was the head of Tyrus at the time, you know, knew that I was a big blues fan, and said, you know, how about we do a sequel to Chicago Blues and call it Delta Blues? And so we started to, you know, just kind of kick that idea around, and Carolyn Haynes, brilliant Southern crime writer, came in to edit. And all these other great authors just kind of started getting on board with it. I had met and had dinner with Morgan Freeman a couple years before that time, because I was it's a long convoluted story, but I was performing at Andover Academy, Phillips Academy Andover out in Massachusetts. And I was performing a couple of sections from Chasing the Wolf. And someone came up to me afterwards and said, hey, I'm with a film company. We're working with Morgan Freeman. Would you be interested in coming down to Mississippi and we can talk and see what happens? And so we did that, and nothing came of the that project in particular, but we made a lot of good friends down there, and, you know, and all that sort of thing. So fast forward a couple of years, and when we were putting together Delta Blues, we reached out to Morgan Freeman, you know, and we partnered with him and his and this literacy foundation that he had at the time, you know, to help us out with the release of the book. And it was funny, I was talking to his business partner, Phil Luckett, and we were asking if we could have the book release at their blues club, Ground Zero. And he said, yes, you can have the book release at Ground Zero, but only if you make it free and open to the public. And it's like, oh no, you know, don't twist our arm on that. That's exactly what we would love to have. You know, the more the better, you know, we'd love
to
make this a big party. And as it turned out, there was a number of people, not just myself, but there was other authors who contributed to the anthology and so we threw together a little makeshift band and played some old blues classics that night at the Delta Blues release party. It was a lot of fun.
You know, I think those jam sessions turn out to be some of the best entertainment. It's spontaneous and in the moment. Do you agree?
Right. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you know, the energy was right. And I don't know if you've ever been to Clarksdale, Mississippi, but it is a very, very fun place. You never know what's going
to
happen.
I have to say I have not. I have not been there. No, I'm sorry to say that I have not been there. But, you know, listen, I can pin it on my map because you never know, right?
Right.
You never know.
It's where the blues was born. So if you like blues, you got to make a pilgrimage to Clarksdale at least once.
It sounds fun. Now, besides that, I mentioned at the top of the show that you do a kind of experimental spoken word art. Can you tell me a little bit about that, please?
Sure. So, this was years ago. I mean, this would have been, you know, the mid-1990s probably. I was playing in a really, really good band. And I made this sort of little contract with myself, you know, that basically I said, you know, before you turn 30, you'll have a record deal. You know, this was back when record deals were, you know, crucial to being a musician. You know, this was pre the explosion of the internet and all that kind of stuff. And my band broke up for a variety of reasons. And I was sort of a little bit, you know, alone in the dark for just a second, wondering what I was going to do next. I mean, I could put, you know, another band together, but the band that I was with was really, really good. And I kind of felt like we were, you know, we were going somewhere with it. And, you know, we had this very confrontational, angry kind of style. And I wondered, I was like, could I bring that same kind of energy just as myself? You know, because I started writing these small pieces. Some of them were narrative, some of them were more poetic, but they were very rhythmic. You know, it was kind of like the writing that I was doing at the time was heavy metal in the same way that the beat poetry was jazz. You know what I mean?
Yes, I understand, it
had that kind of parallel to it. And I started doing these spoken word shows, you know, and around that time I started writing my first novel, A Prayer for Dawn, my first published novel, A Prayer for Dawn. And that's also a very kind of angry, confrontational book. And I found myself writing the book on stage, you know, like I would basically hop up on stage with just sort of maybe a sketch of what I was going to do. And I would, you know, just start performing extempore as one of the characters, you know, and depending on how the audience responded, that determined whether or not it went in the book. And usually, like, if people got angry with me, if people picked fights with me, you know, people walked out of the theater or the club or wherever it was, then that material went in the book. But if people just sort of smiled and clapped, that didn't make it into the book.
Drawing from the angst and the emotion of it all, right?
That's exactly right. Yeah, whatever had the strongest charge is the stuff that ended up in the book. And I wasn't even really paying attention to what I was writing per se. I wasn't like going back and doing a lot of editing and stuff. I was just kind of getting up on stage and sort of purging. And then that became the book. And then once it was done, I was just like, well, here goes nothing. You know, is anybody gonna want this? And so, yeah, it was like shortly after my 26th birthday, I got a book contract for A Prayer for Dawn. And that's when I was like, close enough. So I went back to my old contract where I, you know, I said I would have a record deal before I turned 30. I stretched out record and I wrote in book. That's how I ended up as a novelist.
But that's pretty impressive though. To kind of do it like that. You're a man of many talents. You also have listed that you are a playwright. And tell me about that.
So that also kind of it grew out of those spoken word sessions.
Sure.
The solo stuff that I was doing was starting to become more complex and involved. And I started to bring in live musicians to perform with me and we would create these sort of soundscapes and I would do this spoken word stuff. And before too long, I started wanting to add another voice. You know, I mean, I have this kind of deep gravelly male voice and I wanted a more feminine voice, or I wanted this other type of energy, you know? And so I started, you know, doing this type of work as more of an ensemble. And from that, it just started, you know, growing into actually writing two act narrative plays. And to go back to Chasing the Wolf, my second novel, that was my first fully produced two act play. We had a world premiere in Cincinnati, Ohio, and there was some sort of small readers theater productions around Los Angeles shortly thereafter.
Very cool.
A lot of people write those things and
they never get produced anywhere. like a lot of authors tell me they have, you know, 10 manuscripts tucked at the bottom of their desk drawer someplace. So that they were out there and they were heard is kind of pretty cool, actually. So now are you concentrating more on novel writing, or are you still mixing up the creative energy that you feel?
Well, like I said, like I don't really make the distinctions between the various creative disciplines.
It's just the platform is different. The format.
Right. It might manifest itself slightly differently, but it all kind of comes from the same muscles, you know. Yeah, I don't know that I necessarily do one thing more or that I concentrate the energy, because whatever it is that I'm creating, I mean, ultimately it's going to tell me what it's going to be, right? Is this going to be a novel? Is this going to be a play? Is this going to be a piece of music? Is this going to be a short performance piece? Is this going to be an ensemble or a solo piece? Like, I don't know until I start creating it, right? You know, And I kind of feel like that's one of the difficulties I've had as a professional author, right?
Uh-huh.
Because like I have friends who are very successful authors, and you know what makes them successful is they are able to write in one genre, and they have a core character that is closely identified with them, and they build a readership that really strongly identifies with that character in that genre. And I really admire that, and I'm jealous of them. I wish I could do that, but that's just not the way my process works, you know.
Yeah, but conversely,
I mean,
Nathan, one of the things that I see with you having so many different outlets for your creativity is that you build a very diverse following versus just a reader following. And while that's wonderful to have a reader following, people have been made very wealthy from being writers, strictly of novels. But, you know, it seems like you're reaching out to a lot of different audience members and maybe some overlapping ones. So kudos to you for doing that. When we were talking in the green room, I said, is it true that you were working toward your PhD? And you corrected me and said, no, I have my PhD. No easy roads for you, Nathan Singer. What is your PhD?
So I have a PhD in interdisciplinary humanities and culture with a creative dissertation. My dissertation was creative, was scholarly creative. So, you know, so there was a heavy research component involved, but there was also a creative component as well. It just seems necessary to me to get my doctorate in interdisciplinary work because that's what I do. I mean, everything I do is interdisciplinary. And so having like a super specialized doctorate just it didn't make sense, right? I needed to do work that over, you know, where there was, you know, music and theater and fiction and poetics and social justice and history and culture, like all of these things needed to be intertwined, you know, because that is the core of my work. And so that's the route that we went. And, yeah,
Where were you awarded your PhD?
It is a school here in Cincinnati called Union Institute and University. It's a really great school.
Well,
it's rough,
congratulations.
But it's
congratulations, Dr. Singer. How lovely
Thank
for
you.
You. your book, the current book that I mentioned at the top of the show, Black Church Furnace, is a book that's published by Down and Out Books. Eric Campbell is the publisher. Lance Wright is the associate publisher. Will you tell listeners a little bit about the book, please?
Sure. So although one does not need to read either A Prayer for Dawn or In the Light of You to hopefully enjoy, but at least understand Black Church Furnace, I see Black Church Furnace as something of a spiritual sequel to those books. And it's even more a sequel to A Prayer for Dawn, which was my first novel, which is a sort of a dark, vaguely surreal contemporary satire. Black Church Furnace is also a satire. But sort of the core plot in a nutshell is there are a handful of marginal and marginalized folks, you know, in the early 2000s scattered around the country, you know, who are dealing with issues of trauma. Like there's a character that has PTSD, there's a couple of characters that are struggling with substance abuse. Most of them are artists in some capacity, but not successful particularly. And each one of them is basically under the impression that they're developing schizophrenia because they're hearing voices, they're seeing visions and all that sort of thing. And slowly but surely they start to realize that the voices that they hear in their heads are actually each other. And so that draws them together, and they sort of hole up in this abandoned church in a rather rough part of Cincinnati where I happen to live. And they start this kind of apocalyptic religion. And it's a, you know, and hilarity ensues. Well, I don't know if it does. Maybe a little bit of hilarity. But it's a dark,
it's a very sarcastic book in some ways. And it's mocking in its tone in other ways. Do I have that right?
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
It is.
I mean, it's a commentary.
I'm sorry, go ahead. I didn't mean to interrupt you. Go ahead.
Oh, I was just saying, like, I hope it's not mocking in sort of a superior sort of way, because that wasn't my intention. But it's definitely
the opposite. I think what it does is it mocks those who are disdainful or look down their nose at people who might be marginalized or considered outcasts or different, just different. Even that simply. And so I like the tone of the book. It's not something I've read before. I am curious, though, how Black Church Furnace got its name.
Well, my third novel, In the Light of You. So I mentioned earlier that I write a music soundtrack to go along with each of my books, right? And
yes.
So each book has sort of a musical genre that goes with it. So A Prayer for Dawn is a thrash novel. Chasing the Wolf is a blues novel. In the Light of You is a punk novel. Black Church Furnace is what I would consider to be a post-metal novel. But the neighborhood where I live, which is name-dropped in the book, is called Madisonville. But in the Light of You, I section off a portion of Madisonville, and that is called Black Church. It is not officially called that, but if somebody were to come visit me in my neighborhood, I could show you what part of the neighborhood I call Black Church. And that's where the name came from. That was for the third book, In the Light of You. I don't know how to give away the importance of, or how to describe the importance of the furnace itself in the book without sort of giving it away. But I will say that the furnace is in this church where all these folks gather to start their religion, plays a very important part in their lives for a variety of reasons.
Well, I think the entire location is kind of a character as well. If I'm not mistaken, I note that Benjamin Whitmer, who is one of my favorite authors, his novel Cry Father was just an exceptional piece of work, is a big fan of yours. He says the book reads like an underworld testament, groaning with ghost stories, clanking and burning with all the shuffling grandeur of its subject, Cincinnati. It's haunting. It's furious. It's beautiful. It's a book only Nathan Singer could have written. He's the kind of writer who'll just destroy you in all the right ways. It's quite something else. Ben Whitmer's been a guest on this show. He's a powerful force, as is Steve Weddle. Tyler McMahon, how the mistakes were made. All of these writers have raved about this particular book. And I have to tell you, in preparation for our interview, I spoke with your publisher, who was blown away by it. I mean, he just was blown away by the uniqueness of this story. So congratulations on all of the wonderful accolades you're receiving.
Thank you very much.
You're very welcome.
That means a lot to me also, because those guys are some of my favorite writers, you know? I mean, I think they're some of the most unique and powerful voices in the English-speaking world today. And so,
I agree with you 100%. Ben Whitmer, I think, has such a unique voice. I was stunned at Cry Father. It just blew me back. I read a lot of books, and I have to admit I'm a genre fiction girl, but reading Ben's book was not anything genre at all. It was just an incredible piece of writing, as is your work as well. I'm so impressed with your music that I've taken now to putting up some of your playlist on my laptop when I'm working. I can't have music really playing loudly in the background because I'm generally so focused when I'm, you know, researching or whatever it is I'm going to do. But I enjoy your work immensely. What project are you working on now, Nathan?
So I've got a couple of different projects going on in a variety of different forms. As I mentioned, the Whiskey Shambles are finishing up our second album. I also have another band called Carrion that's relatively new, and it's a bit more focused. It's a little less eclectic than the Whiskey Shambles. You know, it's got kind of a heavier sound to it. I have finished a stage adaptation of my fourth novel, Transorbital, and there's a theater in Kentucky that's expressed some interest in having the world premiere there. I've also talked to a couple of other theaters around the country who've expressed some interest in possibly doing a stage version of Transorbital as well. So I'm working on that, and I've got a couple of novel projects started, and I'm kind of working on each of them individually. None of them have grabbed me and said, "This is your focus right now." You know what I mean?
Right.
So
until
one of them dominates my attention, I'm going to continue to work on a couple of different ones. But yeah, I like to have a lot of different work going at the same time.
Do you really? Do you feel pulled for one in one direction or the other as far as the format of your work? Does one pull you any stronger when you're in your creative process?
No, not really, because they each have their rewards and they each have their drawbacks. You know, I'm always going to love performing, whether it's spoken word or theater or music, just because the response is so immediate, right? The audience is right in front of you, right? And they let you know right now if they're enjoying it or not, right?
Yes.
Whereas with a novel, you know, you could work on it for a long time, months, even years, before it comes out, you know, and, you know, by that time you've moved on, you're a different person, but potentially, you know, and so there's that delay. On the flip side of that, performing and sort of the great anguish of my life as far as this goes, you know, as a performer, is it's so ephemeral, right? I mean,
yes.
You've done the performance,
very
you've gotten
fleeting,
the response,
isn't it?
And now
yes.
It's over. Now it's gone. Now it's
done.
Floats in the ether.
Correct.
Somewhere, you
Correct.
Know, whereas the book lasts forever. You know, I mean, my books are going to be around when I'm dead, and that, you know, and I like the fact that it exists as its own monument, you know?
Yes, yes.
They're all great, and they're all terrible in their own respective ways.
So I want to ask you some things that are not necessarily about your current projects or even your previous projects, but when you were a young boy, what did you want to do when you, quote, grew up?
I wanted to be a musician. Probably more than anything else.
Did you really?
Yeah. I mean, my earliest memories of thinking about what I wanted to be, you know, in my life was as a musician. But, you know, I went through a couple of different phases, but all of them involved the arts. You know, like just for a while I wanted to be a clown. You know, I mean, I'm talking when I was really young. You know, I wanted to,
let me wind back on that. Before you go any further and tell me more, I want to ask you, where did your love of the arts come from? And is your creativity inherited?
So short answer, yes. I come from a very musical family, for sure.
How wonderful.
I come from this small, well, not small, but, you know, this blue-collar German Catholic Midwestern family, you know. But, you know, my grandpa was a church organist, and, you know, my dad played in rock bands in the 60s, you know.
Did he really now?
Yeah, and you know, so some of my cousins are professional musicians, and, you know, and all this sort of thing. So music has always been a big part of our lives. We, you
it's
know,
in your DNA.
At family gatherings, we would sing and holler and all that. What's that?
It's in your DNA.
Right, yeah, to an extent, it definitely is.
I love that. Your family got together and played music. I cannot imagine anything more joyful or more fun, and I bet you laughed and groaned at the same time. Did you not?
All the time, just constantly.
Yeah. I have a musical family as well, and it was interesting to when we had to be put on display when my parents had company over, you know. It didn't make me love it any less. It just was awkward when you are kind of the star in your parents' show.
Yeah.
And especially if your parents aren't the creative ones, you know. So I don't mind it, but let's just say I was never going to be a concert pianist. It was just too much stress, so.
Well, I can understand that in an abstract sense, but the thing is, like when I was growing up, you know, I mean, you know, my parents are artists and musicians. Most of their friends are artists and musicians.
Right.
So I never really felt on the spot. I mean, I would have been perfectly happy to be on the spot. You know, I mean, I've never shied away from the stage. You know. But it was just something that we always did. We were always singing and playing music, and, you know.
How fun. That's a great way to grow up. Boy, howdy, had I lived like that, it would have been a lot different, I'm sure. But it is fun to be able to call upon my musical roots in a crowd. Mm-hmm. If there's a piano around or a guitar or something, I totally get it. I can wing it somewhat, probably not as well as I used to in my younger days. But have you ever tried painting or photography or any of those things? Does that appeal to you, or is that not part of your creative wheelhouse?
So I'm glad you mentioned that, because I do so many artistic, I work in so many different artistic disciplines. There's a certain level of sort of technical knowledge that comes with learning how to write or how to perform, how to play an instrument, all that sort of thing. And I've never really had a knack for visual art. So as a result, I absolutely love it because I'm in all of it. Like, it's still completely 100% magical to me, you know? Whereas as much as I love music and theater and literature and all that stuff, I understand how those things come into the world. You know what I mean? You know, I understand
I
how a book gets written. You know, I understand how one learns how to play an instrument and all that kind of stuff. But I don't know how one paints or captures the perfect moment on film, you know, or even, you know, digitally or whatever. Like, so as a result, it's just pure magic to me, you know.
It's funny that you say that, Nathan. I'm thinking back on, some people I think have just so much talent that even if they take some kind of class, lesson, schooling to enhance the talent that they're given, some of us just don't get it. So, for example, I played piano, organ, guitar. I could play anything with a keyboard I could play. However, I was not a natural musician. It was technically bought on. You could clink a crystal glass and I could tell you the key that it was. But as far as it flowing naturally from me, like closing my eyes and it just happened and I hear the music in my head, it never was there. Maybe, I have other talents, I think. I'm a great talker.
Well, that's a talent.
I think, I think I can engage people. But I understand what you're saying about art. In that respect, I think in that discipline, there is a certain amount of just talent you have to have for that. Do you not agree?
Sure.
Yeah.
No, I do, absolutely. And I think people who have a natural sense for the visual, you know, will gravitate toward that, you know.
Yes.
And there is a certain amount of intuition that works, you know.
Yes.
Just like I feel like, you know, if you're going to pursue a certain craft, you know, hopefully you've got some kind of innate intuition for it, you know, because otherwise it becomes really, really difficult, you know, and
sure.
kind of needlessly painful, I think, you know. So
I agree with you.
Yeah, you know, when you know, if somebody just has sort of a natural eye for, you know, for the visual, you know, they will be able to craft something from their imagination that those of us who don't necessarily have that, you know, are able to do. You know, it's always sort of after the fact, I'll see something that somebody created and I'm just, you know, overwhelmed by it, you know, and
I
know
hear you.
That it would not have occurred to me, you know, to do that. And that's
well,
part of
well,
what,
it,
is, what I find
I
so
think
exciting.
That's what I find about writing. I think that some people are natural storytellers and they learn the craft and because they've read so much. I don't think you can write without having been a reader. It just seems diametrically opposed. Those are concepts that don't mesh. On the other hand, someone like me who reads as much as I do, sometimes two books a day, I could not craft a story to save my life. Now, if you ask me to put together, cook the food and plan the party for the book release, I could do that. And everybody would be blown away, but I could never write the book. I'm tongue-tied even doing reviews, so I totally get where you're coming from.
Yeah, I would totally ruin the party. Like if it was left to me to you know, cook and organize, it would just be a disaster.
It'd be chips and dip and Coke, right?
Right, yeah. It'd be
so
whiskey
funny.
And a bag of pretzels, you know.
There you go. Well, see, there's nothing wrong with that either. You know, it's all in the prep. Nathan
right.
Singer, you are just terrific. It's been a long time since I've spoken to someone who's quite so talented and has so many creative pursuits in the arts. I'm delighted that we finally had a chance to talk. When can we expect your next project in whatever its incarnation is to be released and available?
The next thing I'm sure will be the next full length Whiskey Shambles album, and that should be in the fall. Apart from that, I don't know. The fates will decide. It'll be something because there are several irons in the fire, but I don't know what it'll be.
You will have to let me know when the album is out so that we can get together and talk about music and talk about people we like to listen to and influences on our life, if you'd like to. And I know how to find me. You know how to find me. Tell everybody where they can find you with your books, your music, your spoken word, theater, acting, everything else that you do. What's the best place for them to hunt you down?
Yeah, if you're interested in the books, definitely Amazon. Just, you know, look at my name on Amazon and all six books are available there. Music, go to whiskeyshambles.com. Basically for everything else, hit me up on Facebook. I have three music projects that are on Facebook, as well as my personal page. And that's probably your one-stop shop for everything else is Facebook.
Currently. And I will tell you folks that Nathan answers his Facebook posts really fast. He's really good, and that's how we kind of connected. We have a lot of mutual friends, and so that was lovely. But he kind of hit me up and said, "Hey, have you read my book yet?" And I said, "No, as a matter of fact, I haven't." He said, "Well, can I come on your show?" And I go, "Yeah, how about next week?" And he said, "Okay." And it was kismet. It was meant to be, wasn't
great.
It, Nathan?
It was meant to be, absolutely.
If only I hadn't been sick last week, and I apologize for that.
Well, that's okay. It gave you more time to read Black Earth Furnace, right?
It did give me more time. I had to reach out to Lance over at Down and Out Books. And by the way, I want to thank Down and Out Books for sponsoring some of our shows. If you're not familiar with them, they are just a terrific Press, go to downandoutbooks.com and see what they have available. We're so lucky to have so many of their writers on any one of the shows in the network, and there are now 23 live shows or podcasts here, so find us. Nathan Singer, I wish you all the best, and you and I are going to be talking again, my friend, I hope.
Thank you so much, Pam. I really appreciate it. I look forward
to
that.
It's been a pleasure talking to you. Thank you, and have a good night.
You too. Night.
Bye-bye. And that's my show for Wednesday night. Be with me next week when we have Superstar Wednesday again. Thanks for being with me, and thank you, Mom and Dad. Good night.